Broadcasting from Orchard Park, New York,
and Boca Raton, Florida,
it's the Freight 360 Podcast. From freight broker sales tips to sports talk, this podcast is all about helping you grow as a freight broker. We're your hosts, Nate Cross
and Benjamin Kowalski.
Let's talk freight. Welcome back, everybody. It's the final mile where we answer your questions about freight brokering and prospecting and everything in that realm. We have five good questions today. Please take a moment, check out the description box, support our sponsors. That helps support this channel, and check out our website, freight360.net, to get all of our content and check out the Freight Broker Basics course to learn more about our training. All right, Ben, our first question, most of these came from Facebook this week. The first one asked, how does having good or any credit impact my ability for carriers to book loads with me? So pretty hot topic. We did, we've done a couple episodes where we've talked through this in the past. Credit is, so here's the reality, right? When you are a brand new freight broker and you have no credit, what that means is if someone goes to look at your ability to pay, whether it's a motor carrier or one of their factoring companies, some of them will say, we won't work with you until we see good credit and you've been in business for X amount of time. That's just a reality. Others may have workarounds. So how will it impact your ability? Well, that's how it'll impact it, is that it's going to be harder for you to find carriers or factoring companies that will approve carriers to haul loads for you because they're worried that you have no payment history, at least not that's been reported, and therefore you're not seen as credit worthy. So what do you have to do? Pick up the phone, talk to somebody at the factoring company that's denying you, and find out, what do you need to see? Is it trade references? Is it do I need to be quick paying a bunch of loads at first? Would you approve that? Do I need to put money up as a contingent? There's a ton of factoring companies out there, and they're all going to have different responses. Human beings can oftentimes make exceptions if they have a good, trusting conversation with somebody on the phone that you typically can't get over email. So if you're getting that from carriers that say, hey, I can't haul for you, my factory company won't approve you, find out who, you know, what details can you find out? Are they telling you I have bad credit or that I have no visible credit? And what, you know, what can I do in lieu of that? What's your take on it? And here's the thing. I've never personally had to go through this myself. I've helped work with companies that started up from the ground level, and they experienced this exact same thing. What's your take on it with the credit situation?
For sure. I mean, I think it's twofold, right? The one is just, if you post up a load, right, the carriers are going to look at your credit rating on DAT or Truck Stop. So the first thing is they're less likely to call you. Because again, if you don't have credit, one, there's a few things that need to happen. If they have a factoring company, they know it's going to be harder to get onboarded. Two, they might just not be willing to take the risk to work with a new brokerage that doesn't have credit, right? Because they don't want to go through the hassle. And third is the hassle, because even if they want your load, it's usually not a fast process to get approved to their factoring company, to get that carrier to actually be able to work with you. So for all those reasons, they'll usually just take the next best load, right? So what that looks like from the brokerage's standpoint is, like, you just don't get phone calls on load postings and carriers don't reach out because they see that you don't have any credit on your load posting, right?
Yeah.
So it's,
I think the market's gonna impact it too. Like right now, when there's, yes, when there's not a lot of freight going around, it's probably a little bit easier, I would imagine, to have those conversations because carriers are looking for work.
Yeah, for sure. So, but again, like, so, you do have to work through it tediously because it's not a fast process.
And I wanted to highlight a good episode to listen to, if you haven't, is episode 185. We had Desmond Clark on. This was about a year ago that we did this. And he talks about, he started his business up and, like, it was in the freight boom, right? I think he started in 2022 when things were still hot. And we talked with him about his experience having to cross this hurdle of the credit discussion. And he did it in a time when carriers were hard to get. So it was even harder for him.
Even harder.
You know, they could pick whatever load they wanted to and, you know, charge whatever they wanted to per se. So definitely check that one out. But it's a realistic thing. So good stuff. Next question. Ooh, how can I sell my brokerage? It's basically inactive with no customers or software, just a clean history. Well, I'm going to talk about selling a brokerage in a second, but answer this guy's question. You're not, all you're selling is an MC number here. If you don't have any, if you're not running any freight and you don't have like any, like a, you don't have like a TMS that you own a license for that's part of that sale, you really don't, you're not selling anything but a business entity and a license. So,
right.
I mean, there's a market out there to buy MCs, but I don't know. I guess let's answer this one first. How would you sell an inactive brokerage?
Well, here's the first thing, right? If it's inactive, right, that means
I don't think there's any value there. I would just shut down your MC.
Yeah, because I'm also, and I'm not for sure. We've talked about this off air. Like, I would like to be able to get someone on the FMCSA to explain exactly how their guidelines fall. But like, from my personal experience, for what it's worth, again, dealing with that is, if it's inactive, when you go to sell it, it's going to start back from zero anyway, right? So what happens typically, and again, the FMCSA, if you've got an MC, even if you've got business running through it, right? If you just sell it to someone else and called the FMCSA and say, I want to sell my brokerage, there is an alert that basically goes out to all the credit reporting agencies and all the factoring companies. And they say, hey, there's new ownership of this brokerage, and they start the credit back at zero. And basically your MC then looks to every carrier and every factoring company as if you're brand new, even though you might have been in business for 20 years, right? So how this is typically done when you see larger freight brokerages sell, right, to get around that FMCSA thing is basically what happens is Nate, if you own a freight brokerage, and let's say it's, you know, a $20 million freight brokerage, and you're going to sell it to me, right? What I will do is I will create another company, another LLC, right? Say it's called ABC LLC, and yours is Nate Cross Brokerage, right? You will be the majority owner of this new company, right? I might be a minority owner. If I want to buy it from you, say I own like 10% and you own 90%. You are the majority owner of this new company. You will then take that corporate document to the FMCSA and say, hey, I'm changing the name of my company to this new corporate entity. Here's my documents. I'm the majority owner. I want to change the name. You change the name, and now that name has changed, even though you're still the owner, to the new company. And then after a certain amount of time has passed, I then buy you out of the new company. I become the majority shareholder. And then I go back to the FMCSA maybe 6 months later or 8 months. I'm not exactly sure how the time frame typically plays out, and go back and say, hey, like, Nate's now retired from the business. I bought him out. I need my name under the FMCSA, because the company already owns it. We just changed the ownership of the company. Because to prevent fraud, the FMCSA doesn't allow the change of ownership without notifying everyone that there's a new owner because of the fraud and all the other things that we're seeing in the industry.
I'm curious. Like, I would want to hear, because we see brokerages get sold all the time, but usually, like, when I've seen a brokerage sell that I worked for, they did create a new business entity about 6 months before the sale went through. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, and who knows how this could change? Like, the way that you change contact information at the FMCSA for the point of, like, the main point of contact has changed recently, just simply because of fraud, like you mentioned.
Right, it's getting more difficult. They're more stringent.
Oh, but outside of the, because this stuff can change as far as like the business part of it. But in general, how would you sell a brokerage? I would say, you've got to figure out what the evaluation of it is. And sometimes, depending on the size, you might need to go to a business broker or a business analyst, someone that can give you an evaluation. And it's normally going to be a multiple of your bottom line, like the company's bottom line net profit. And depending on what kind of freight market we're in, that multiple can change. So
significantly.
Yeah. Like, it could be, you know, 3 to 5x in one market, and it could be like 8x in a different market. It just really depends on, because I was talking with someone about this just yesterday, actually, about how it is it is hard to get a high multiple right now because you don't have a like 3-year track record of like growth and doing well. They're seeing you've actually you've had a soft market the last 3 years. So it's hard to get a high dollar amount for a brokerage right now if you're trying to sell it. So
for sure.
But you said, I mean, you get an evaluation of it, and then how do you find someone to buy it? I mean, there really isn't like an open market for selling and buying brokerages. But there are people that are well connected and know, like I've seen in social media groups, people asking about buying and selling brokerages. Well, what do you got? Cause I know you kind of dabbled a little bit
in, for sure. And we're going to be, I'm going to be doing a lot more of this. In fact, I got a call with one of the guys who's been doing M&A work in this space for like 40 years, the Tenney Group, Spencer Tenney. I'm going to be talking with him Friday. And if you are interested in selling your brokerage, reach out to us. I would like to talk to you. I want to learn a little bit about why you want to sell it, what you have there. Again, an MC with no customers, no revenue, no tech, and inactive. Again, I think about, like you said, opportunity cost. Well, if I'm starting from zero and I'm just getting your MC, what does it cost me to get a new one? If it's basically the same as a new one and it only costs me, you know, $500 and $1,000 to get the LLC, I'm not going to pay any more than it costs me to get a new one.
The trade-off is, so let's look at buying an existing versus getting a new MC. If you're buying an existing one, it's got age, which is a good thing, but it also has anywhere your MC's been blacklisted anywhere on the internet or at promoter carriers in the past that you don't know about. That comes with that too. The flip side, with a new MC, you get a fresh start, but you also have no history. And that's, we talked about the credit issue. We talked about some companies have requirements. You got to be in business for so long before we'll work with you, stuff like that. So there's a trade-off. For sure.
For sure. Right. And one of the reasons why I'm really interested in doing this is we've got a lot more people reaching out to us. So we're going to work to develop either a pipeline or at least a referral source to be able to help folks that do want to sell their companies that they can reach out to us and we can help. But there's a lot to it, right? A great episode on this. Paul at Freight Caviar just interviewed Spencer last week on Freight Caviar. And I just listened to this episode yesterday. And we're going to have him on our show soon to talk more about multiples, what the market looks like. But if you listen to the episode on Freight Caviar, literally the one that just dropped like this week, Paul has a great conversation with Spencer. They talk about the multiples, the difference between a freight brokerage and an asset company, what margins are expected.
What kind of multiples I didn't hear Paul's episode yet, but what multiples was he ballparking? So
freight brokerages, he was like, you know, if you don't have gross margins at least 15 or higher, you're not going to have a lot of buyers typically is the first thing. The second thing is they tend to work with companies that are about 20 million and up. So again, these are the larger companies, but multiples of the bottom line number, not gross margin, but EBITDA, like what is your net income after you pay everything, right? It's that number times typically 4 to 6 is about what a multiple is for a freight brokerage. Yeah. You will see them climb up to maybe 10 or 11 when you get to the really big companies that are really efficient and they have very, very good margins between revenue and the very bottom line or a tech package or something in there.
Yep.
Asset companies, on the other hand, you're going to see closer to like 3 to 5 because they're capital intensive businesses. Freight brokers, on the other hand, do not require a lot of capital to operate or investment.
You made a good point
growth.
There. The tech package, like if you're a large brokerage that has a proprietary TMS, I mean you're in the big leagues if that's the case. But those are going to be in a way different ballpark than just selling a book of business, essentially. Yes. So it's a good point.
And the things you've got to do to sell it, right, are also different. Like he has a great list. And again, my call Friday is to get some of these things to put on the show, but just a list of the things that are expected from buyers, right, that they expect in 24 hours. You need to be able to kick out your books, your income statement, your balance sheet, the normal things. But you also need to be able to send over a breakdown of your customers, revenue per customer, right? Anything that outlines how long you've been dealing with these customers. Like there are things that are expected from people that are going to be buying a company that you really need to have done ahead of time. And if you don't, that's fine. You can get them in place, but it's usually going to take you a few months to get your books cleaned up, to make sure they're structured in a way that the people buying it can review quickly to see. And the thing Spencer said that I really was a really big takeaway too, is he's like, you know, when you see these companies sell, and again, he's talking about companies 20 million and up, but I would say it's still pretty true, because I've been involved with some that are 10 to 20 million. And the most recent requests are $10 million brokerages that I've been talking to people about, is there's usually the buyer is talking to a handful of other brokerages too, right? They're usually not just talking to one potential company they want to buy. They'll pick a handful that they want to buy. And the best one by the time they get to the end of it is the one that they're actually going to put an offer in. So, I mean, it is a longer process. I mean, typically 6 to 9 months for bigger companies. On the shortest end, probably 4 to 7 months, probably closer to 6 or 7 for any of these sales. So it's not an overnight thing. It's not something you see that turns around that quickly, but it is something that really interests me, and I want to do more content on it this year. So I'm going to be digging in with folks and bringing more people to talk more about it.
That's cool. Next question. Can a shipper be pursued if a broker fails to pay the carrier? So this is obviously coming from the carrier's perspective.
Yes.
The answer is yes, but the reality is they probably are just going to tell you to go pound, you know, go kick dirt, right? Go pound salt, whatever the phrase is. So let's run through a scenario. The customer works with a broker. The broker hires a truck and broker goes out of business. Broker got paid by the customer. That shipper's not going to, you could send them to collections or report on them all you want. They're not going to pay you, and they're going to have an explanation for any broker that sees that on their credit report. Now, the more realistic one that we're seeing now is fraudulent double brokering, right? Someone scams a freight broker, rebrokers the load to a carrier, gets paid by that broker for it. And then you get this motor carrier who actually hauled it, who never got paid, and you can't find the scammer. They're not going to pay up. So now this poor little owner operator who wants to get paid is going to go to the shipper and say, where's my payment? And they're just going to say, nah, I already paid this invoice. This went to ABC Logistics. And if you're ABC Logistics, you have the option to tell them, like, legally, you don't have to pay them. And you're end up in the same scenario as before, where the carriers basically get pissed at you and they're going to go to the customer. The customer is going to tell them to go F off, and maybe nicer words. But the reality is, to keep the customer could end up being liable, and they could say, all right, I got to pay this, and I'm going to fire my freight broker over. Or they might say, go F off. This broker's going to end up paying you. So, but yes, the customer is legally liable for the freight payment.
I would say you're right. And you know, in the standard scenario, that's what the broker's bond's for. So call the broker's bond company, right? Well, if they're not paying you.
Okay. If we're not talking double brokerage.
Not double broker. A standard situation. Broker gives you the load. It was legitimate. They don't pay you. You file on the brokerage's bond. They'll dispute it. And that should resolve it, right?
Yes. In scenario, when a company goes out of business and that bond gets chewed up really fast and then there's nothing left, it's first come, first serve, then you could end up in the situation too. But you're right. Correct. The bond is, that's what it's meant for.
Now, and the second one though, right? Like, to your point, like, the way the law reads, right, is that that shipper has to pay the carrier that moved their freight. They benefited from it. It was their cargo. They did the work. They owe them regardless of who got paid or didn't get paid or how many brokers were involved, right? Now, the question comes into is, how do you get the shipper to pay you, right? Because Nate's point of, they're going to direct you at some other broker in your plan telephone and nobody wants to give you a straight answer, right? And this is where it's hard, because, like, you don't want to pay an attorney thousands of dollars to recoup a couple thousand dollars. Like, that doesn't leave you anywhere, right? This is why I think it's really good to have an attorney that you can reach out to when things aren't going wrong. Like, so I really suggest that anybody, a carrier or a broker, like, you should find a transportation attorney that you can talk to and ask, hey, if these things happen, is this something you can help with, for one? Because most of them, at least that I've been involved with, like, they get resolved by a demand letter from an attorney, which isn't really that expensive. So if you have an attorney that you've been working with, they can typically, for a letter and $100 or whatever, $200, send a letter to the shipper. That demand letter usually resolves it without them having to go through further legal action, because it's only a few thousand. Yep. But again, finding that attorney once things are wrong becomes very difficult to do that quickly. I've used Legal Shield in the past. I've suggested clients do it because Legal Shield is really just a centralized legal service that connects you with an attorney for what you need. So if you don't, like I use it and for the business, I think I pay like $100 a month, but at any point in time, I have a certain amount of hours for whatever topic I need and they'll connect me with an attorney. So yep. Again, it's a good way to get connected with one. But if you don't have an attorney, you really should reach out and make some phone calls when you have some time to find one and see if they can help if these things do arise because there's fraud, to your point, there's fraudulent brokers, there's fraudulent carriers now. Like this stuff happens more and more often and you don't want to be caught flat-footed with no ability to solve it after you're screwed and you paid for gas and you paid your driver and you've got no ability to recoup this without finding an attorney and spending hours calling them to find a transportation attorney that can help with this, right?
Yep. Next question, is contingent cargo insurance absolutely required or can I just vet my carriers carefully? I'm not sure this person really understands what contingent cargo does.
Yeah.
So you should vet your carriers carefully, but contingent cargo, the only time you would need a contingent cargo is if your customer requires it. And a lot of yes. bigger customers do. But if no one's telling you that you need it, there's no need to have the policy. I think contingent cargo is a policy that is benefiting your shipper in the event that the primary cargo policy from the motor carrier falls through. And there's like depending on how it's underwritten, there's a lot of exclusions potentially. Where I have seen one pan out is where the primary cargo policy from the carrier lapsed mid-shipment or something like that, and the contingent did pick up on it. But if a cargo policy denies a claim, it doesn't mean that the contingent cargo is going to cover it. So,
correct.
And a lot of customers don't really understand this. They're just being told from their lawyers, like, hey, require this via contract on all your brokers.
That way the question's worded leads me to believe that the person believes that if the carrier doesn't have the right cargo insurance, the contingent will cover it. When I read that, it seems like the intent, and that is not true. If your carrier does not have cargo insurance, your contingent will not cover it. Correct. Part of your job, in fact, probably the most important part of your job other than finding the truck is finding the truck that has the insurance that your customer is requiring and that covers the entire load value. Yep. They also do not stack on top. If your carrier has $100,000 and it's a $200,000 shipment, your contingent doesn't go on top of that carrier's cargo to cover the next 100,000.
For sure.
They are not at all the same, or do they cover the same thing?
We did a good episode on insurance. Just go to freight360.net and search insurance in the content bar at the top right. You'll find all of our good stuff there. All right, last question. Where can I find prospects on a daily basis? I think everybody has a little bit different methodology of what their go-to is. I like using Apollo.io, in my opinion, it's like a Zoom Info. I know some people like Zoom Info. Some people like Seamless. Is it Seamless.ai, right?
Yeah.
So
Seamless.io, I think.
Yeah. If you just look up Seamless lead generation, I'm sure you'd find it. Yeah. But, you know, there's searchable databases that you can find. Data Axle is from used to be Reference USA. That's typically free through your library online. Some people are lucky enough to have a giant database inside their brokerage. Google's also your friend too. And a lot of the new AI, like ChatGPT, for example, you could type in there, like, give me the top 10 or the top 100 blah, blah, blah shippers in the United States. And you'll probably get 100, a list of 100 leads right there as a start. So, don't overthink it when you're trying to find prospects. I would say be intentional. So if you're, if you've been in brokerage for a while, I would stick with what's working for you, whether that's a certain niche commodity that you're successful in, or a certain region that you've got good carrier capacity in. No need to reinvent the wheel. There's a ton of databases out there, resources. I mean, we've gone through a full episode on how to generate leads. Google databases, LinkedIn, Google Alerts, trade associations, chambers of commerce. I mean, there's a ton. So just don't overwhelm yourself. You know, pick a couple and use them. So
trade associations. I mean, anytime there's like an event, those are really good to find, you know, leads. Data Axel, we talk about a lot, which used to be Reference USA, you get with your library card, is a great place to see lots and lots of companies by industry type. And then you can take those companies and then plug them into like an Apollo.io to find a person or a phone number. Or you can take those companies, you can use just Google, right? And just Google Maps and type in Steel Companies Houston and get a list, right? And you'll have phone numbers there, right? So there's really no shortage of ways to find companies. It's really more, I think, the harder part is trying to figure out what you want to call. Once you've got a topic, then you can kind of narrow it down, right? And again, you outlined my go-to is I first go into either Google or Gemini now and just go top 100 steel companies. Smallest steel companies. And then I'll take some of those lists and just start working through them and just start adding to it. Right.
Yep. It's great, man. Good stuff. Sweet. Cool. Great episode. Good questions. That puts a lid on this final mile. Any final thoughts?
It does. Whether you believe you can or believe you can't, you're right.
And until next time, go Bills. That wraps up this episode of Freight 360. Check out the show notes for links to anything that we've referenced on this episode. And make sure to visit us online at freight360.net to see our entire library of episodes, videos, blogs, and more.
And make sure to check us out on Facebook and subscribe to our YouTube channel for daily and weekly tips and content. And if you'd like your question answered on the show, fill out the Contact Us form on our site, and we'll see you next week.